Okay, I want you to picture a scenario. It's, say, 5:30 p.m. on a Friday. You are still at your desk. You've been there since 8:03 a.m. You have closed three major tickets. You've rewritten the documentation that no one else would touch, and you're feeling pretty good.
You're feeling like you've actually contributed something.
Exactly. You are, in your humble opinion, absolutely crushing it.
And then you look over the partition wall.
You look over the wall, and there is, let's just call him Steve.
Oh, we all know Steve.
Steve has been watching golf highlights on his second monitor since, like, lunch. He spends half his day formatting spreadsheets that nobody even reads. And then the email comes out.
I know where this is going.
Congratulations to Steve on the Employee of the Month bonus.
And that is the moment your soul just leaves your body.
It feels like a physical punch to the gut. And you're thinking, how? Why? I work twice as hard as Steve. It feels objectively, deeply wrong. But that's the trap, isn't it?
It is. That burning sense of injustice is, I think, universal. But here is the uncomfortable truth we have to start with. Fairness, in the way most of us experience it, is almost entirely subjective.
Subjective. I don't know. It feels pretty objective when Steve gets the check and I don't.
Well, the check is objective, but the decision-making process that got him there, that is usually a complete black box.
Right.
The problem isn't that the decision was, random. The problem is that the values driving that decision are invisible. You value closing tickets. Your boss apparently values formatting spreadsheets.
This is a translation error. I'm speaking English. The boss is speaking Steve.
Precisely. And usually we just complain about this and move on. But
Right.
today, we are doing a deep dive into a piece of research that looked at this exact problem, this black box, and decided to solve it.
How?
Not with better management training, but with high-level mathematics.
This is one of the most fascinating papers we've covered in a while. It's titled Assessment in Decision-Making in Universities, Analytics of the Administration Staff Compromises.
Yeah, don't let the academic title scare you. This is a collaboration between the Kharkiv National University of Radioelectronics in Ukraine,
Right.
specifically their Trust Portal team, and the University of Jyväskylä in Finland.
And their mission is, frankly, wild. They're trying to take these squishy human concepts like democracy, justice, even something like work passion, and turn them into hard data.
Vectors. Matrices, algorithms. They call it deep evidence.
Deep evidence. I love that term. It sounds like a detective show.
It's a great descriptor, actually, because traditional analytics, what they call analytics 4.0, that's just looking at data, right?
Sales numbers, papers published, that sort of thing.
Right, that's just evidence. Deep evidence is what happens when you take that raw data and you filter it through the digitized values of the people involved.
So instead of just measuring what I did, they're measuring how much everyone cares about what I did.
That's it. They're trying to digitize the preferences of both the administration and the staff to find out where they align.
And where they just completely crash into each
Let's do
other.
that.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if there is a mathematical way to solve the Steve paradox, I absolutely need to know it. Where do they start?
They start by, by validating your feelings. They reference something called Adams's equity theory.
Which sounds like a legal thing, but it's psychology, right?
Right. And Adams' equity theory basically says that justice is relative. You don't evaluate your reward in a vacuum.
You don't just look at your paycheck and ask, can I buy groceries?
No. You look at your paycheck, you divide it by your effort, and then you compare that ratio to Steve's paycheck divided by Steve's effort.
So if I work at level 10 and get paid level 5, but Steve works at level 2 and gets paid level 5.
You're furious. Even if level 5 is a perfectly good salary, the inequity, it comes from the comparison. And the researchers argue the root cause of all this is a lack of transparent minds.
Transparent minds.
Yeah.
That sounds a little bit sci-fi. Are we reading minds now?
In a way, yes, but with spreadsheets. Look, in most organizations, the administration has a value system, but it's hidden.
It's implicit.
Right. Maybe they value bringing in grant money way more than teaching students, but they don't explicitly say how much more. They just say, do a good job.
And we're all left just guessing what that means.
Exactly. So the first step in this trust portal system they built is that the administration has to publish a vector, a specific mathematical breakdown,
What's it called?
the administrative value system, or AVSAW.
So it's like a nutrition label for your job performance.
That's a perfect analogy. It might say a research paper is weighted at 0.4, Supervising a PhD student is 0.2, community service 0.1, and so on.
It has to add up to 1.0.
Correct. So the rules of the game are posted on the locker room wall before the game starts.
No moving the goalposts.
Right. But that's just the top-down view. Here is where the deep evidence part kicks in. The system requires every single employee to publish their own value system, the AVSPR.
Wait. So I get to go on record. I get to publish a vector that says, actually, I think mentoring is the most important thing we do here, so I'm weighting that at 0.5.
Yes. You define what you think matters most.
But does that actually change anything? I mean, is it just a glorified suggestion box?
It changes the lens through which all the data is viewed. So when they run the analytics, they don't just generate one ranking. They generate a kind of multiverse of rankings.
A multiverse.
Yeah. They can show you, here is where you rank based on the boss's values, and here is where you rank based on your values. And over here, that's where you rank based on your colleagues' values.
That is fascinating. So in my universe, where mentorship is king, I might be the number one employee, but in the admin universe, I'm number 10.
Exactly. And just seeing that discrepancy, it changes the entire conversation. It takes the emotional toxicity out. You can't be mad at Steve for cheating if the company published a document 6 months ago saying, we value Steve's specific type of work at 0.8.
You might think the strategy is stupid, but you can't call it unfair.
You can't. It's transparent. It forces the implicit to become explicit. You can't hide bias in the shadows if everything is just a published number.
Okay, I'm sold on the theory.
But where this paper really gets fun, and I mean genuinely entertaining, is how they apply this to the organizational structure.
How so?
They basically gamify the university staff.
I saw this in the notes. They use a soccer analogy.
They do. They divide the staff into three groups based on their performance ranking. The major league, those are the seniors. The first league are the middles, and the second league, the juniors.
Okay, so like the Premier League, the championship, standard hierarchy so far.
It looks standard, but there is this one mechanic here that completely subverts the usual corporate power dynamic.
What is it?
In a normal company, the administration decides the criteria for everyone forever. But in this system, once you are sorted into a league, the leader of that league sets the rules.
Wait, the leader? As in the employee who scored the highest.
Yes. The top performer in the group becomes the standard bearer. Their personal value system, that AVSPs we just talked about, becomes the temporary law for everyone else in that specific league.
That is wild. So if I'm in the senior league and the top performer is a guy named Kate Bait, but
Bod is the specific example from the paper. Yeah. So Bod is the top senior based on the administration's rules. He's king of the hill.
Okay.
So the system says, okay, Bod, you're the best. We are now going to use your values to judge everyone else.
Because the assumption is, if he's the best, his values must be the formula for success.
That's the idea. But Bod has his own unique perspective. Maybe Bod thinks that having a high Hirsch index, which measures citation impact, isn't actually that important. Maybe he values being a department head more.
So everyone in the senior league gets re-ranked using Bod's specific weights.
Exactly. And this is where the irony kicked in during the actual study. When they re-ran the numbers using Bod's values, Bod actually dropped to second place.
No way.
Yes. Another employee named Av shot up to number one.
So Bod's own values dethroned him. That is just poetic justice.
It is, but think about what that means for the organization. It proves that Ivar was actually living up to Bod's ideals better than Bod himself was. Mm. It empowers the experts to define what expertise looks like. If the top researcher thinks citations are garbage and patents are gold, the whole senior league shifts to chasing patents. It decentralizes the culture.
It stops the administration from forcing a one-size-fits-all culture on people who might know better. It makes the culture fluid.
And it keeps people moving. Uh-huh. They built in a social lift. Just like in soccer, there is a relegation zone.
A dreaded drop.
The bottom three performers of the senior league, they get sent down to the middle league. And the top three from the middles get promoted up.
That creates some serious stakes.
It does. The paper calls it a metabolic process. It forces circulation. If you're a senior, you can't just coast on your tenure.
Right. You can't say, well, I got here 10 years ago, so I'm safe.
Not at all. You have to keep performing, or a hungry middle is going to take your spot.
And for the middles, that has to be incredibly motivating.
It is, because the path upward isn't about, you know, kissing up to the dean or waiting for someone to retire. It's purely about cracking the top three. It's transparent.
And the best part for the university is that this motivation costs. what, $0?
Exactly, $0. They aren't handing out extra cash. They are just rearranging status. It motivates without blowing the budget.
But I want to push back on this a little. We've been talking about democracy, but so far, this league system sounds pretty cutthroat. It sounds like a Hunger Games scenario. Where does the actual democracy come in?
That's the next layer of the analytics engine. They call it democratic self-assessment.
Okay.
Imagine if, instead of just the boss ranking you, every single employee ranked every single other employee.
See, that sounds like an absolute nightmare. That sounds like a high school popularity contest just waiting to happen. I'll vote for you if you vote for me.
It absolutely could be if it were just a simple vote. But remember, this is all based on deep evidence. You aren't just ticking a box that says, I like Steve.
Ah.
You're acting as an expert. You are using your published value system to rank the objective achievements of everyone else.
So I'm not just giving an opinion. I'm running a calculation. I'm saying, based on my values, where I prioritize teaching, Steve's record looks like this.
Precisely. And when they aggregate all of those rankings, they get a democratic assessment vector. Now, here is where it gets spicy.
What'd they do?
They compared the administration's ranking list against this new democratic ranking list.
Well, let me guess, they did not match.
Well, they matched at the extremes. Everyone, the bosses, the staff, they all agreed on who the absolute superstars were.
And the slackers.
And they all agreed on who the total outsiders or low performers were. The geniuses and the slackers are obvious to everyone.
Okay.
But the middle, total chaos. The administration might rank someone 10th because they brought in a big grant, while the staff ranks them 25th because they haven't published in 2 years and they're difficult to work with.
So who wins? If the boss thinks I'm a 10 and my peers think I'm a 25, do I get the bonus or not?
This is where the paper proposes a compromise. They call it weighted democracy.
So everyone gets a vote.
But not all votes are equal.
Some animals are more equal than others.
In a meritocratic sense, yeah. The administration gives each voter a weight based on their own performance. If you contribute more to the university's success, your opinion on what success is counts for more.
That actually makes a lot of sense. If you are the top researcher, your opinion on research probably should carry more weight than the person who just started.
The paper makes a very specific argument here. They say this prevents the administration from just picking tamed experts.
Tamed experts? Mm. So you mean like yes men?
Exactly. Sycophants, people who just parrot what the administration wants to hear. This system, it filters them out in favor of what they call ally experts.
And the difference is?
Because your value system is published in advance and your performance is objective data, the administration isn't picking you because they like you. They are empowering you because your values mathematically align with the university's success.
You can't fake being an ally if the math is public. You can't bribe a formula that was published 6 months ago.
That's the key. The in advance part removes the ability to manipulate the outcome. It builds trust, because the rules are set before the players even take the field.
So we've looked at achievements, at ranking,
mm-hmm.
but we haven't talked about the other half of the equation yet.
The reward.
The reward. Because let's be honest, I'm doing this job to get paid.
And this is where the paper shifts from matrix DT results to matrix BIBD bonuses. Because just as you can rank people by work done, you can rank them by what they got.
Salary, titles, awards.
Office size, yeah. And this is where we find out if the system is actually fair. This is where they calculate the injustice metric.
And it's an actual calculation.
It literally is. They measure the mathematical distance between the achievement ranking and the reward ranking.
So if I am number one in achievements, but I'm, say, number 20 in rewards.
That is a massive distance. That is high injustice.
Yeah.
The paper has a very evocative phrase for when these rankings don't match up.
What is it?
They call it punishment for the innocent, rewards for the uninvolved.
Ouch. Rewards for the uninvolved. That is brutal. That is Steve.
That is absolutely Steve. If the admin achievement ranking and the admin bonus ranking have a huge gap, it means the administration is being hypocritical.
Right.
They're saying, we value X in their public documents, but they are paying for Y in private.
And usually that Y is something hidden, like seniority or nepotism or just office politics.
Or just inertia. We pay Steve this much because we've always paid Steve this much. But when you visualize it as a gap between two vectors, you can't hide from it. It forces the organization to confront its own hypocrisy.
It makes unfairness tangible.
It does. But it goes even deeper than just money, right? The paper talks about passion.
Now, to me, passion is something you feel. It's waking up excited to go to work. How on earth you calculate that? It seems like trying to calculate love.
This was my favorite part of the whole analysis. They define work passion as the relationship between your intrinsic motivation and your extrinsic motivation.
Okay, break that down for us.
Intrinsic motivation is how well your achievements match your own values. So if you value research and you did a ton of research, you have high intrinsic motivation. You're doing what you love.
Okay. And extrinsic?
Extrinsic motivation is how well your rewards match your values. If you value research and the university gave you a best researcher award, that matches up.
So passion is just when those two things align perfectly.
Actually, no. And this is the real insight. Passion is what fills the gap.
The gap.
If you achieve a lot in areas you value, so you have high intrinsic motivation, but you get rewarded in ways you don't care about, or you don't get rewarded at all, but you keep doing it anyway. That is passion.
Oh, wow. So you're doing it despite the lack of external reward.
Exactly. The formula essentially looks at the share of your energy that's driven by internal values versus external rewards. Mm-hmm. And when they ran this analysis, they found something, well, a little alarming.
What was that?
That real high-level passion is a scarce resource. It was concentrated in the top 25% of the staff, the leaders.
And the other 75%.
They were largely driven by extrinsic factors. You know, they work because they get paid. Or they had low scores in both.
That implies the whole organization is being carried on the backs of a quarter of the workforce.
Which is pretty much the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule in action. But here they have the names. They know exactly who those passionate people are.
And the danger is?
The danger, which the paper alludes to, is that if you rely on that passion too much without fixing the injustice metric,
you burn them out.
You destroy them. Passion is a fuel source, but it's not infinite. If that gap between achievement and reward stays too wide for too long, even the most passionate person eventually just stops. They get cynical. They become the uninvolved.
So bringing this all back to the listener, most of us don't work at a university in Ukraine. What does this mean for us?
It means that we need to stop thinking of fairness as just a feeling. We need to start thinking of it as data. The so what here is that bias thrives in ambiguity. As long as the values are hidden, Steve will always get the bonus. This research, it's a blueprint for removing bias by forcing a kind of radical honesty.
It's asking the organization to say, here is exactly what we value down to the decimal point.
And it asks you to do the same.
It's a bit scary, honestly. It's putting your cards on the table.
It is. But transparency is the only real antiseptic for office politics. If you know the rules, you can play the game. Or you can look at the vector and say, you know what? This company values things I don't care about, and you can leave.
But at least you know.
At least you know. It empowers you to make an informed decision.
That is a powerful takeaway. But before we wrap, I have to mention the future plans section of this paper. Because where they are going next is, well, it borders on Black Mirror.
Yes. The digital clones.
It sounds like a joke, but they are serious. Tell everyone what they are planning.
So think about all the data they have. They have everyone's value vectors. They have the achievement matrices, the history of decisions. They are now working on using this massive data set to build autonomous digital agents.
AI versions of the bosses.
And the staff. Imagine a digital clone of, say, a dean that is trained on their specific value system. This clone could make decisions 24/7. It could assess grant applications, rank personnel, distribute bonuses instantly.
All based on the deep evidence and preset values.
Right. So I could walk into work and an AI version of my boss has already promoted me or fired me before their real boss has even had their coffee.
Potentially. And the argument they make is that this is the ultimate form of transparency. The AI doesn't have bad days. It doesn't get hangry. It doesn't play favorites. It just executes the value system perfectly.
But is that the ultimate transparency or is that a dystopia? Do we really want an algorithm, even one based on our own values, making the final call on our livelihood?
With no human in the loop.
That's the big question. We are moving from, trust me, I'm your boss, to trust the algorithm. It's your boss's clone.
And I'm honestly not sure which one I trust less.
It forces us to ask what leadership even is. Is it just a complex set of weighted values that you can code? Or is there a human element, empathy, context, mercy, that deep evidence can never, ever capture?
Something to mull over the next time you are filling out your self-assessment form. Are you training your replacement or just your digital judge?
A sobering thought indeed.
We've gone from vectors to digital clones and hopefully given you a new way to look at the guy in the next cubicle. Thanks for listening to this deep dive.
We'll catch you on the next one.